Welcome to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast where we discuss tips, tricks, and current topics related to all things in the blind and partially sighted community. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce the founder of Blind Beginnings and your host, Sean Marcellet, and whatever co-host is on this week. Now, here's your host, Sean.
Welcome back to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. I'm your host, Sean Marcellet, and with me today, I have two co-hosts. I have Keisha and John. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
So today we're talking about winter sports. And both of you are pretty athletic type people. So why don't you each introduce yourselves and maybe a little bit about your vision and what winter sports you enjoy?
Okay. So my name is Keisha Anderson and I have retinitis pigmentosa, RP for short. And I basically just have light perception. And my big winter sport that I did all through my teen years is alpine skiing. Although I've also tried cross country and snowshoeing, and though I'm not a huge fan of winter, I'm a huge fan of winter for the sports.
Yeah, I'm John. I have rod cone retinal dystrophy, and my vision's around, I don't know, like the 5 or 7%. So I see quite a bit depending on light and shadows and stuff. So I can see a fair bit. Right now, the main winter sport I play is blind ice hockey, and I started that in my third year of college. But I've also tried a number of winter sports like cross country, downhill, snowshoeing, and snowboarding. And I've also tried a couple of the different winter activities like sledding, tobogganing, snow tubing. I've even tried bobsleigh.
Yeah. Oh, we got to hear about that.
Awesome.
Also, I do want to say I tried blind hockey once and it was awesome, but it kind of scary.
Oh, really? Nice.
We will definitely talk about hockey.
Sorry.
Okay. So I've kind of dabbled in quite a few different winter sports. I did curling for a couple of years. I've done quite a bit of cross-country skiing, one season of alpine skiing, not at any kind of good or competitive level, and then just things for fun, like snowshoeing and ice skating. So let's see, where should we start? Let's talk hockey. It is Canada's national sport, after all, and lots of hockey fans out there. So, John, can you explain how blind hockey works?
Yep, sure. So for blind hockey, the main adaptations we have right now is first the puck. Instead of a tiny little rubber puck, we have a large hollow tin metal puck. I can't remember the dimensions right now. It's like at least 2.5 inches thick and about 4 or 5 inches in diameter. And it has 8 ball bearings in it, so it rattles. And because it's made of a tin metal, it scrapes the ice, so it has what I like to call secondary noise. So if you hear the puck will move around, you hear the rattling, but you can also hear it sliding on the ice. And then the next main adaptation people will notice, or actually sometimes might not, is that the fact that the net is a foot shorter. And that's to help our goalies, who are usually our totally blind players, our B1s, and they are blindfolded so that they don't have any light perception or they can't see anything. And so the purpose of the shorter net is to keep people from shooting it higher up and give the goalies a better chance to stop the puck. And then the third thing is our adapted passing rule. So when you reach the offensive zone, if you are the puck carrier, your team has to make one pass to another teammate, and then a whistle, a high-pitched bird whistle will go off, and that'll tell the goalie and the lower vision defenders that the other team can shoot now. And yeah, that's pretty much it. The only other thing is we're working on a point system, kind of like wheelchair basketball, wheelchair rugby, so that for those who do know, B3 class players are worth 3 points, B2s are worth 2, and goalies are 1s. And if I remember right, we're somewhere like 13 points on the ice. So you kind of do a mix and match and have different kind of partners. And then besides that, we've had lots of comments of people walking in and wondering what's all the extra stuff. This looks like just hockey, because at our tournament it looks pretty fast. And yeah, that's the gist of it.
I just wanted to interject and say, I guess we probably talked about it on the podcast, but just in case anybody doesn't know, like what is B1, B2, and B3?
So a quick thing on that is in international blind sports, there are three classifications so that you have everyone kind of competes against their own vision levels mainly. So B3s are people who have 10% vision or less to about 5%. And yeah, so those are B3s. B2s are 5% to light perception, and B1s are light perception to total. And in sports like racing, like swimming and track, you generally only run against other people in your sight class. And Sean, you can probably have more about that since you did those racing sports.
So for a sport like hockey, where you're going to have multiple team players, the point system is kind of to make sure that it's fair, because you don't want to have, like, say Canada's team is all B3s and they have a higher level of vision against another country's team that's all B1s where they have no vision at all. It wouldn't be fair, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, precisely. And also something that I noticed over the years is, unlike a sport like goalball where your vision classification doesn't matter necessarily because everyone's blindfolded, hockey has so many different vision levels even with those classifications, because you can have five B2s out there, but someone might have tunnel vision and can only see a little bit in this one spot. Someone will have periphery. Someone will have star guards and see a decent amount, but everything's like all shadowy and glossy and stuff like that. So, and even the B3s, like it's pretty crazy. So you're not just worried about sight classifications. When you go out there with your line mates or your D pairs, you're trying to talk to each other and figure out what each other can see as well. Because like I have a full field of vision, but I just can't see detail or far away. And if I'm playing with another B2 who only has tunnel vision, they generally like to play further back so that they don't have to, like, they just turn their head and they can still get a full view of the ice. But if everything gets too close, they're going to have a harder time seeing it, even though they have the same classification as me.
Yes.
So in that way, it's quite interesting.
That is interesting. And my question was going to be, how do you avoid like crashing into each other on the ice?
Yeah. So that's the other main rule is there's no intentional body checking. So you can't go for hits or anything. So generally most the high vision B3s are also in general are really good skaters. So there's a lot of avoiding, and sometimes people will, when you're going both on the wall, going to the corners, sometimes you know that if you're the first one there and someone's there, you might get bumped because of vision or whatnot. But in general, especially in the higher level ones, the guys are really good. They know that they're not supposed to hit. So the, it's mainly about skating ability and stuff. And a lot of other times it's like, just brace yourself for impact kind of thing.
Okay. But if you're not allowed body checking, but everybody's visually impaired, isn't the excuse of like, oh, sorry, I didn't see you there, man. Like, wouldn't everybody just do that all the time?
You'd think that, but most, like, I guess experienced hockey players and referees, coaches, they can tell what a body check is. And like, there is some body contact allowed. Like you can kind of wrestle in the corner. You can pin people to the walls like regular hockey, but like, it's a not super obvious, like three strides. Like there's like, people can tell if you're really going in there to try and hit somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. So there's a relatively good distinction. It also depends on the referees sometimes. And also if we're playing in Canada and the US, mm-hmm. I've said, it's actually been a little bit, I think in the US it's actually a little bit more physical, because in Canada, we really explain to the refs that there shouldn't be. Right. It really kind of depends, but yeah, in general, people are doing their best not to body check at all, but they will definitely engage in contact, and some people still like the contact, so.
So my other question is, how do you know that it's a teammate nearby to pass the puck to versus an opponent?
This is where like a lot of communication happens. You're really relying on your teammates and stuff, but also there's like, you'll see it or hear in hockey when people are tapping their sticks on the ice, there's actually another rule that says defenders can't tap their sticks in their end, which makes more sense, because like if you were someone skating down the corner, and you have a defender chasing you, you're more like you hear the tapping, and you have to assume that that's going to be your teammate. And that way also the defenders kind of know that there's someone else there. So that's kind of how the rule is set up. So if you're defending, you can't do that because you can't confuse the other person. You might confuse your own teammates as well. If they have low vision, they'll come and attack you as well. I guess I forgot to also mention that instead of white as the secondary jersey color, it's always yellow and then another color, because yellow has a better contrast on the white ice and it's a lot easier for the majority of people to see. Besides that, it's mainly communication. You're really talking to each other out there. You're relying on the B3s that are skating in as forwards, or your partner as a defenseman, depending on their vision level, to talk to you.
Keisha, you said you tried hockey once. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
So, yeah, it was really interesting because I forgot to mention that I actually did a bit of figure skating when I was really young. And so I know how to skate, and I love like the art form of skating, but I can get around pretty quick, but I never actually really played hockey. Like, I kind of messed around on the ice with friends before, but I found it really interesting because first of all, I was a little bit nervous that I was gonna like trip over sticks and stuff like that. But it's kind of handy having a stick on the ice in a way, because you can it's like having a cane, but just like a bit different.
Yes.
Also, another thing that I found really interesting was how heavy the puck was, and like how I remember it being kind of heavier, quite a bit heavier than like a normal puck. So it was an interesting thing for sure, because it was like a different sort of experience in that sense.
I've tried it. I mean, I've never actually played a game, but I've tried just like the hockey stick to like, I don't know what you call it when you push the puck with the stick, like dribbling.
Stick handling, yeah, stick handling and shooting.
What dribbling is to basketball, that to hockey. and I could not do it at all. I just kept skating past the puck and like.
Oh no, Sean, yeah. I've been trying this for 8 or 9 years now, and I'm just now getting used to that. Like I had the same thing with Keisha when I started, because I never played any sort of hockey, not even ball hockey in the street, until college, when I finally came out and tried it. But yeah, I know, like pushing that thing, that puck around, is like, oh my gosh. I'm like, yeah, I can't do this.
It's hard. No, it's, and even so hard. Like having somebody like, I don't know, pass the puck to you and try to connect with it. I'm like, nope. It was just, yeah, it sort of reminded me of.
Even shooting the puck, like, yeah, no, I could barely, the only thing I could know to do for myself is, I like, some of these guys have been playing for 30 years, and some of them played at major, junior, junior B. Some of them played college level hockey. It's like, yeah, no, they've been playing for, since they were kids, they've been doing it on the streets for hours and hours. And I'm just like jumping into this. All I knew was, I have fitness and cardio, and I can, like, I will teach myself to skate. And for the first like 4 years, that's all I would do. I was skating people's way and just right. Do whatever. I will block the puck, and I was like, I'll deal with this, and I'll slowly learn how to do all this stick handling things. And actually, thanks to the pandemic, I spent a lot of time in the summer just doing that for hours, and I feel like I've gotten a little bit better.
Nice.
Hockey is not currently a Paralympic sport. Is that correct?
Really?
No, it is not. It's blind ice hockey. It's worked, like, it's hard to believe that the sport has existed since 1970, but only since around 2010, when the guys at Courage Canada, now Canadian Blind Hockey, really started to get it going, like, and get it organized so that the three major teams in Canada, Vancouver, Montreal, and Toronto, could get together and play tournaments and actually standardize rules, because apparently all three teams had a different puck and slightly different rules and all this stuff. And even the teams in Calgary and Edmonton were smaller and different. Like, there were so many different things. So in 2010 or so, they standardized it. So now everyone plays with the same thing. And since 2015 or so, we've got the Americans on board, and they've got over 20 teams, programs run all over the U.S. And half of them are at least are run or supported by their National Hockey League affiliates. So it's really good. Wow. And now that the next goal is to get Europe going so we can get the World Cup kind of thing, so that we can slowly get Paralympic involvement, hopefully in a in the next decade or so is what they're thinking. Like Sweden, Finland, Russia, and Great Britain all have programs running right now. So it's starting to get there.
Cool. Yeah, it seems crazy. Such a big sport that it wouldn't be a Paralympic sport yet. Let's talk skiing.
Oh, yeah.
So, Keisha, you said you've been skiing for like all through your
teen years.
So how did you get involved?
Yeah. So when I was in elementary school, I think it was like the fifth grade or so, we went and there's this little mountain in Kamloops here called Harper Mountain. And we did like a little school trip up to Harper Mountain. And the woman who was acting like as my education assistant at school, her husband is like a really good skier. And so when we went skiing, it was kind of like, okay, well, we got to figure out like how it's going to be accessible for me and stuff like that. And so he basically just partnered up with me for the day and just skied with me and like, you know, me just being a really green skier, green, new to the slopes and also on the green hills the whole time.
Yeah.
thank you for that.
good one. I got that.
So he, like, I think to myself, like, wow, what a great patient guy. Like, he just bared with me that whole time. And so that was my first time on, like, an alpine skiing trip or an alpine skiing experience. So I was probably about 10. And after that, like, we did a couple other school trips the next couple years. And then I think it was eighth grade, I started doing like a lesson series. And I got connected with Sun Peaks Adaptive Sports. Mm-hmm. And so that Sun Peaks is the bigger mountain up in Kamloops, and a lot of people know about it. It's quite popular. It's a really good ski hill. And I got connected with Adaptive Sports up here. And again, Dave partnered up with me, and we also had like Sun Peaks Adaptive instructors, and I did like a lesson series. And so basically, you know, as you would expect, I started at like the bunny hill. Well, I started on a green, and I kind of had this thing that I said. I was like, hey, like, I was kind of talking to Dave, and I was like, I was talking about my goals for that season, because I was I was really fresh to skiing, and only having done like a couple little outings. And I was like, by the end of this series, wouldn't it be great if I could do a black diamond?
And ambitious.
And a lot of people, like, a couple people I said that to were like, I don't know, like, you know, I don't know. But he was like, right from the get-go, he's like, hey, you want to do a black diamond? We'll do a black diamond. You know, you'll learn quick enough whether you're able to do it or not. And, you know, that you're the best judge of your own ability. So
nice.
So basically, yeah, it was super cool. So he's a really, really great guy. And he's seen my skiing go from the worst to all right. so through that season, we did work our way up, and actually I did end up skiing a black by the end of it. But I wasn't the greatest. I was like inching along, like almost in tears, because I was like, this is kind of scary, but I'm really excited about it. Anyway, so with blind skiing, there's a couple of different ways that it can be adapted. So what we started with was, originally what we started with was I was actually tethered to a guy, like an instructor behind me, which I hated. I have to tell you, I absolutely hated it, because, you know, who wants to be like strapped up to somebody else? Mm-hmm. And it was this really whack contraption called a trombone, but it's not at all like the instrument. It was like, I was like, why is it called a trombone? But anyway, it's like this like metal looking contraption that like holds your skis together, so that like when you're first learning to ski, like they kind of encourage you to snowplow, which means like you're skiing in that nice V shape, which is really hard on your quads, but it's not like the most efficient way to ski, but it is a good way for beginners to start, because it's either that or ripping at full speed down the face of the mountain and yeah. running into who knows what and who knows who. So, so it kind of forced you to learn how to snowplow, and while also keeping you in the instructor's control in case you went a little bit loopy on the mountain. So we did that, and I hated it, and I made that very clear. So quickly, they figured out that I was okay, and I would be fine to ski untethered. And so Dave basically wore like so then Dave became my guide at that from that point onward, pretty much. Not that he wasn't already, but like more my guide than ever before. And he would wear a beeper on his back, so like, you know, imagine like a backup beeper on a truck, that sort of beeper. So he'd wear that on the back of his jacket, and I would follow the sound down the slopes. And it worked really well. And like, I learned a lot, of techniques that year. I learned how to do more like parallel turning and all that kind of stuff. And I, started to gradually come from a snowplow into proper skiing. So we started, we've tried the beeper. We used the beeper quite a bit. As I progressed, as the years went by, I also tried a Bluetooth headset. So that is more like what Paralympic level skiers use, because, you know, I'm not the expert on Paralympic skiing, but from what I understand, I have watched it a little bit when the Paralympics happen. It is quite interesting to me. From what I understand, they do wear Bluetooth headsets, and the guide actually skis behind the Paralympic skier and calls their turns and calls the gates and stuff like that when they're racing.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing is you got to make sure, like, you and your guide have got to work through your training together. Like, you really need to get accustomed to each other's ways and to like your communication. As John was saying about hockey, like, communication is so key. And another thing that I would highly recommend if you're going to become a competitive skier and you are using a Bluetooth headset is to have a guide who is pretty, like, has a nice calming voice. Because there's nothing quite like having a guide on the other end of the headset who's like, ah, or like, yeah, ah, like,
look out for that.
Ah, oh, left.
I meant right.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then, so there was that, but like, one thing that I really, so the beeper was fantastic. I still, like, I haven't skied for a while because I'm kind of on the student budget right now, but and skiing is not the cheapest of sports, but if I was to ski again, like, the beeper is really easy. Like, actually, as time progressed and I got faster and you know, Dave needed to be more ahead of me, he actually rigged up like a louder beeper and like amplified it with like a whole little setup, kind of like it was like kind of in like a cup sort of thing, so that it was more amplified. Actually, he was great. He did a lot of little like tinkering to make sure that we had like a really accessible experience. And another little accessibility component that I utilized while being a skier was, I wore a vest, like a really bright colored like neon vest that said like blind skier basically. For all of the rowdies on the hill who are like ripping past, and you know, like, to them, I don't look like I'm blind. I'm just skiing.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, when I've got the neon vest that says, "Hey, I'm blind," like, they're going to be less, they're more likely to like swerve around and also be like, a bit more understanding if I'm not like, you know, getting out of their way in a timely manner. And also, usually the guide would wear something too that would signify that we are a team. Yes. And that, you know, like, we're a two deal. So like, if you're zipping on your on your board between us, that's kind of problematic because we are operating as a team and you don't want to mess with the system. So mm-hmm. So that was kind of like how it worked with skiing. One thing I really loved about the Bluetooth headset was that it kind of like gave me the opportunity to feel more like I was skiing independently. Like I was no longer tethered for like years and years. Like I was totally skiing independently, but it's different when you're skiing and there's no one in front of you and there's no beeper and it just feels freer, you know? Like, and you've got this voice in your ear, like calling your turns if you need it. But often with skis, the more you ski, the more you're able to kind of feel the fault lines. And the fault line is like the part, like when you're skiing, you can kind of tell where the center of the slope is just based on like how gravity pulls you. Mm. And that's called a fault line. So basically, the more time you have, the more time you spend skiing, the more you figure out where the fault lines are. And so eventually, like if you've got just someone going behind you and calling your turns or telling you if there's like a slow sign or a person coming up, it's like, it's incredibly freeing because you're just out there skiing like anyone else. And there really isn't anything that I've ever experienced quite like speeding down a slope. It's just, it's really, really breathtaking. So I think that kind of summarizes my experience.
So I did a season of skiing when I was like 18. Mm-hmm. And like went every Sunday through what the like 7 or 8 weeks where we mm-hmm. can ski in Vancouver locally. But for me, I had two guides. I guess they were really like not having a lot of faith in my abilities.
I did have that for a while. A tail gunner and a guide. Yeah.
Right. So the first day we had this pole and I was in the middle and the two guides were on the opposite. So we were each hanging onto this pole horizontally and skiing down the mountain in like three in a row so that I could just feel what it felt like what does skiing feel like, because I had never really seen skiing or experienced it. And then pretty quickly after that we advanced to the two-person pole. So I'm on one end, one of the guides is on the other. We tried the harness and I hated it as well. Only went down one run. It just like I don't know what I didn't like about it. I just didn't like anything about it. And then I had one guide in front of me and one guide behind me. And at the time I could sort of see to follow the guide in front of me, like the bright jacket against the snow kind of, but not really. So the guide behind me was just calling out left, right, left, right. Mm-hmm. And then eventually it was just the guide behind me calling out. But I was going to ask you, like, what if technology fails and you think you've got a guide behind you in your Bluetooth and then they don't say anything for a while and you're just like, hello, am I on my own?
That's a really good question. And actually I've experienced lots of things on this hill. And that has happened, but what I typically try to do is I'll check in every, like if it feels like an absurdly long pause, I'll be like, hey, like, are we all good? I've also experienced, if it's a really windy day on the slopes and I'm using a beeper, or if for some reason if the beeper battery goes dead, we just have this thing like stop, like, and stop means immediate, like, stop.
Yeah.
Sometimes you even have to bail, like, crash it, stop. But sometimes the wind will be really like blowing and it obscures the sound of the beeper because he's like, you know, however many meters down the slope from you. So in that case, like I'll call out, and if he doesn't hear me, then I'll stop. And he always, like, he every time he turns, he sees me, and so if I stopped, then he would check. And and also, just because I wanted to kind of relate to your story, I have also done the pole thing, holding the pole. Actually, often if for example, we're in like a, because there's some runs that you'll go like halfway down one run, and then if you want to go onto a different run, you have to like slide through this little speed track into like through some trees.
Yeah.
And in that case, like often what we'll do is I would grab my guide's ski pole, and then I would like just I would like make myself kind of small and you know aerodynamic, and we would kind of like skim through the little path, and I would kind of go behind him like a skiing sighted guide.
Cool.
And so also if all else fails, worst comes to worst, sometimes I'll get my guide to like pole tap as we're going down the hill, which is pretty talented on their end, which is where they'll just tap their ski poles and I'll just follow the sound down the hill. But ideally, you know, that we don't, yeah.
I feel like if you were following the beeper, I would feel this pressure of like, oh, I gotta stay with them, gotta stay with them, gotta stay with them.
Oh, for sure.
Chase them down.
Yeah, I get why the Bluetooth would be freeing, because you could relax a bit and go at your own pace then, right?
Exactly. And it is a little bit like that. Like you gotta like kind of make sure your speed matches his, and you're always kind of on the alert. Like, okay, I need to keep hearing, I need to keep it in my ears. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, sometimes you'd get into a really great groove and you'd be speeding and you'd be like, yeehaw, like, let's go down this slope. Like, and you're going for it. And then suddenly you reach like a pitch that isn't exactly, you know, you're like, okay, I need to slow down so I can like take this pitch a little bit slower and like more carefully. And, but meanwhile, your guide is like, okay, we're doing great, so we're just going to keep ripping. Right. And then I'm over here like, ah!
Well, I was wondering that, like, wipeouts. Yeah. Like, how long does it take your guide to notice?
Pretty quick, actually. Like, if you're like, for me, like the guides that I've had, like, we're pretty connected. Like we're pretty like aware of each other. So like if a wipeout does happen, like, I'll say like, hey, or like I'll vocalize something like, hey, like,
I'm down,
man down, or they'll just see like, oh yeah, there's a yard sale happening over there.
So John, you've tried snowboarding. What's that like?
Ooh.
Well, before I say that, I kind of technically tried them both at the same one after the other.
Okay.
So since I have vision, I have watched and seen, so I do know what it's supposed to look like. Mm. But I'm trying to think. I don't think I did it before in high school or mentioned, because like we didn't do it as a PE group. It was a club, so you'd have to sign up for the club and then pay and bring. Most of the people had their own gear, so I guess I didn't try it till like, I'm gonna say, maybe like 17 or so. And I was going with a friend who was another blind guy, but he was a B3, and he also like his family they have like the trailer, like they have all their own gear and stuff, so. They ski all the time and snowboard all the time. So I just went up there with them once, one year, and then he was going to teach me. So we started with skiing because that's the one he liked. And I'm like, sure, whatever, I'm going to try them both. And we started on the bunny hill, and it was all good. I was just following him because that's what we were just doing, because I had no vision for that. So I was still, the snowplow thing was really getting to me. And also, I really didn't like having so many dang things to hold on to half the time. Like, you... when you're just going down the hill, you don't really need those ski poles. They're kind of just in your way, I feel. Which is why I think I like snowboarding better. But before I get to that, so, because you know the bunny hill, the T-bar lifts that you use to get back up?
Yep.
I don't know what happened. I was following him, and then he stopped, and I kept going. And I was in snowplow, and I was, like, looking down at my skis, just like, I'm like, I'm trying to stop, and I look up, and all of a sudden, I'm like, whoa. Boom. And wow. I went right into the side of the T-bar building.
Oh no.
Oh.
And like the people that said we didn't have at that, we didn't have any jackets saying blind skiers or anything. We were just chilling on the bunny hill, and I was like, boom. I'm like, after that, I'm like, lost my ski, like at least it was square on, like full body. Like if it was a cartoon, I would have gone through, and that would have been a shape of me through that wall.
Gotta say, the best wrecks happen on the T-bar. Like, I can't even tell you, like, I've definitely been dragged up the ski hill because I fell off the T-bar and, like, got my jacket caught. And, like, one time, like, you know, my guide, Dave, like, I'm pretty sure, like, I fell off the T-bar, like, halfway up the hill. And I was quite little still. And he, like, came over and, like, he had to, like, pick me up and ski with me while he was holding me. And then, like, wow, what a guy. Like, to his credit. Like,
yeah,
amazing,
really, what a guy.
Amazing job. Actually, I've seen him do some crazy things. Like, I've seen, he's skied backwards to, and, like, watched me ski. I one time saw him, because I one time asked him, I was like, Dave, can we try moguls? And he was like, sure, we can try that. And he skied down backwards on moguls. And I, what? Because he was trying to watch me, like, make sure I was okay. And I was like, this guy's amazing, man. So, but yeah, great, great Rex on the T-bar.
Yeah, I don't like that T-bar. Even later when I was snowboarding, I fell off it. And my friend, the people I was with, they didn't stop. They went to the top and I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. So I kind of just went to the side and I found the down part. But the thing I didn't realize is apparently higher up in the trail, that's the split you go if you're trying to do all the tricks. Because I'm just snowboarding the down the hill. And I'm like, what is that? Is that a rail? Oh, no.
Oh, gosh.
I'm like, that's a rail. Like, stop. That's a rail. Like, keep going. What's that thing? I don't know what that is. That, oh, that's a jump. I'm like, I stop and go beside it. I look at the jump as I stop. I'm like, yeah, that would have been interesting. And part of me kind of wanted to do it. But also, I'm like, yeah, no. And I didn't find my friends till I exited that spot, and apparently I was at the part where there was like the major jump. I don't really know how big that jump was, but all like Sean, you know Ashley, and you never heard her scream as loud as she tried to scream for me to hear her, because I was about to go off the most dangerous thing ever.
The idea of snowboarding freaks me out, like putting both your feet onto the same thing. Like, that just seems really dangerous or like against science.
I have the reverse thing because with the skis and snowboard, you screw up one little foot and you got a couple inches and it'll cross and hit the other one and you're gone. I like the snowboard, like the stability, like it's all going one way. I find it so much easier. You need to stop. You just go broadside and you dig in with your heels or your toes and you're stopping. You just sit down. I'm like, I'm not going anywhere. And I don't know. I felt in more control that way. And like I had my hands free. Like, I don't know. I just felt I felt more secure just being on one.
How do you, one thing. How do you get off the chairlift with a snowboard attached to your feet? Or is it attached? Like, I don't.
Yeah, it is. You disconnect one foot.
Okay.
So that you can, so that when you hit the ground, you just hit the board and you just push off. So yeah, it is a bit of a trick because you got to like disconnect while your feet are attached. It's like, yeah, it's trickier. But again, like it's one thing to worry about. I'm like, I guess with the skis, you just hop off, but you're also, where you lose a pole and it's like, kind of thing. like Keisha said, yard sales. Like, I didn't have any snowboarding. The only funny snowboard thing I had was at the bottom of the bunny hill because the whole bottom end is like all puffy snow that's like 4 feet deep. I didn't stop in time. I just went into the thing and I'm just like lying there. I'm like, I can't get up because my feet are attached.
See, I personally love skiing so much more because you have those different, the ability to operate the different feet and mm-hmm. The more you spend with skis, like the more, like the less you cross them because you learn about how to like dig your toes in properly and put your edges into the hill and stuff. But I do understand what you mean. I also think that snowboarding would be really challenging on the flats.
That was a problem.
That's true. Yeah.
And the other thing is, I mean, I would love to try snowboarding. Like I've tried it kind of like not at a ski hill, but like my family and I went like sledding one time and somebody brought like a snowboard, so I like tried it on the sledding hill and I just like fell down like 87 times and like got a really sore back. But but yeah, like I don't know, like it seems more challenging to me, but you know, I know that a lot of people love it. And so like I heard somebody said to me that snowboarding is like an 8-hour car crash. Like learning how to snowboard.
It might, like, I'm trying, because yeah, the first time, like after I switched, like after I hit that T-bar building, I took off my skis. I'm like, dude, I'm taking a break. And then when we got back to the top, I'm like, yeah, all right, pass me that snowboard. We're trying the next thing. And I don't know, just like, because turning, because you're just like, when you're, yeah, like turning, you just go side to side. You can slow down quite a bit because you just take really wide slalom turns. when you're just starting out, like go on your, and you can stay, like, especially since I still have vision, I could stay facing downwards and looking where I'm going, go as I go side to side. Mm. And then when you just speed up, if you want to go fast, you just point straight and go. And I did learn the tricks, like you kind of get used to, like, everyone has their dominant side, like foot you want to lead with, but you kind of go practice both feet and you get used to it. And I think the idea for flats is you want to maintain your speed, because if anything else, you just disconnect and go for a walk, I guess.
Oh, then you sink.
Keisha, did you do a Black Diamond run?
Yep. I got, definitely. Like that first year I did one, and it was like, you know, it was not like my best job ever. But it was certainly, it was certainly a goal I achieved. But as the years, like I skied for a couple of years for sure. And after that, and definitely did blacks, quite a few times, and progressively got better. I'm not like an amazing skier, but I have a lot of fun, and I don't fall down every time anymore, and I don't cry when I'm looking down the cliff anymore. But I still
wig out when I look down that cliff, because I can see. I'm like, oh boy, it's a long way.
See, even though I can't see, your tips still, you can still feel your tips going over the edge into air.
Yikes.
And you can, I put my ski pole down to feel what the upcoming pitch is like, and it's like, oh boy. you're basically like, if you're when you're in the middle of like a black, it's like you could just lean back and the cliff's right there. It gets wow. so steep.
Crazy. Yeah. That's crazy. So that's a nice segue to my love of cross country skiing.
Yes.
Which does not have, in fact, the thing I don't like about cross country skiing is the downhills. That's the part I'm the worst at. But I love how you can, there's tracks, so your skis go in the tracks if it's a well-groomed trail and you're good to go, and you almost don't need a guide, except that whenever you get to a hill, the tracks are washed out, and then you definitely want a guide when you're like zipping down the hill part. But it's so much safer.
Yeah.
So the first time I learned to cross country ski at Ski for Light, and Ski for Light is this big ski event in the States. There's a Canadian version as well, but I went to the States. It was in Colorado that year, and it's for people who are visually impaired. And there's also people with mobility impairments, and they provide a guide for you for your whole week of skiing, which is kind of cool. And so you ski every single day, and you're with the same person, and they guide you and teach you if you don't know how to ski. So my guide taught me how to ski, and at the end of the week we did like a 10K race. And of course I'm competitive, so I thought that was pretty great. And it was the same 5K loop that we did over and over and over all week long. So the 10K race was just the loop twice. And I got to know the course pretty well after skiing it, right? So I named all the hills off of my wipeouts. So there was Belly Flop Hill. There was Leg Break Hill, because I felt like I didn't actually break my leg, but I had previously broken my leg. And that one reminded me of the leg I broke. I can't remember the other names, but they all had names. And that's how I knew what hill we were on. And I just could not figure out the whole like snowplow. Like in the end, I would squat down so low that I was practically dragging my butt on the snow as we were going down the hills. It was so silly. But I love like the full body workout. I was pretty good at the uphills. I was good on the flats, and it was just super fun. I loved it.
I agree. I think that cross country is really fun. Like when I was a little kid, I didn't love it as much, but now like as I get older, like I find it to be like a really fun workout, a really nice way to enjoy like the winter, like outdoors and just like fresh air. And you know, it's just a good experience. And I also think I feel the same way about snowshoeing. Like I put them in the same category kind of, because you know, they're a very similar activity.
I have another funny story about cross country skiing. So when I was dating my husband,
I really wanted to show him that blind people can do lots of things.
Ah, yes. I know the one.
So, like, we went ice skating and we went hiking and we went to yoga and we went running and we just did, like, we went tandem cycling and we did all these things. And I was like, let's go cross-country skiing. And he's from Manitoba. So he, like, but he moved to BC when he was 19, I think. So he had cross-country skied when he was a kid, but I don't think since then. So he's never guided a blind skier either.
Oh, no.
So we get our ski, we rent skis and we head off and we're just trotting along, but I kept getting ahead of him because I'm competitive and I was trying to prove something, right? So I would be ahead of him. He's behind me. He's trying to give me direction, but he can't even get the words out because I'm sort of leaving him behind. And all of a sudden I skied into like a tree hole. Like,
oh no.
I was like stuck in the snow. It was all powder and sinking. And I'm like trying to like dig myself out. But, you know, I've got the poles kind of attached to my wrists and I've got the skis attached to my feet and I'm like stuck. And the more I wiggle, the more I sink. And he's like, he catches up to me. He's like, let me get my skis off and I'll come in and help you out. And I'm like, no. I got this.
So, oh my goodness, I can relate hard to
this. It's so funny. I just had to show him that I didn't need help and I could do this, darn it. But in the end, I think he did take his skis off and he had to help me because I just couldn't get out on my own. It's pretty hilarious.
Oh, that is funny.
It was fun.
Well, one of my favorite... Oh, go ahead. Sorry, may I? Okay.
Yeah.
One of my favorite cross-country experiences was there's this place close to where I live called Steak Lake. And it's a really big cross-country skiing area. And so a couple of my cousins and I were out there cross-country skiing. And we went on like a nice little quick little like 3K like warm-up or whatever. And then we were like, well, let's hit the trails. So, you know, one of my cousins like chose a trail and we were on it and we were like well into the trail. Like it had been a couple hours and we were like, well, maybe like, should we keep going or should we turn back? And he was like, nah, let's keep going. Like it'll take just as long to go back in the same way. And we, you know, we can enjoy like new scenery this way. And I was like, okay, cool. Well, let's hope so. And turns out it was way longer than we expected. I think we ended up doing like 18 kilometers that day. And it was like, whoa, like we ended up getting back to the car, like really close to like dark. And it was a day. We were all pretty tuckered out that night.
Wow. That sounds epic.
It was pretty epic, actually.
I wish we had a chance to really do like the full course when we tried the cross country skiing a few times. I just did like the intro course that we had. What did we? I guess was it the Disability Skiing Association, Sean? Or I can't remember what it was through. Or I guess
Nordic.
Got us
It was Nordic Skiers, and we did a few learn to ski kind of activities with blind beginnings cross country. And last year we actually did with Adaptive Snow Sports. We did an alpine downhill ski learn to ski thing as well. So we definitely have dabbled in that a little bit through Blind Beginnings, but it is usually just like a one-time come out and try for the day. And you can only get so far with,
hey,
yeah.
Hey,
let's talk for a sec about the program that we did up here last year with Blind Beginnings.
That's right. Tell us about that, Keisha.
Yeah. So I got the pleasure of helping or like being one of the people to organize an outing for the Blind Beginnings Kamloops region. And we actually partnered up with Discover Sun Peaks, which is like a Sun Peaks kind of, you know, like ski and snowshoe touring kind of company. And we went and did some snowshoeing. We tried some snowshoeing and it was super fun. And so that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, we did snowshoeing down here too.
Yeah.
One time for Blind Beginnings as well. So we're all about like introducing people to the wide range of activities that there are.
Wild outdoors.
Totally. Yeah, totally. But then you do really have to try it multiple times to kind of figure it out, right? Especially skiing. Like it's not something you're going to learn. I did that whole season and I tried a blue run once and there were some moguls and I couldn't figure that out. And I never really got past that. But it's very exhilarating. I don't know. Like once you find the right person that you trust to guide you and you can just let go, it's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. I was lucky in high school. We had an outdoor club that was like hiking and stuff. And then in the winter we actually went snowshoeing. So we did it consecutively and we'd go on the same rough trail. And it's different because I was the only blind person in the group. And I think at the time I wasn't even using my cane yet, but so my teachers would just wear bright jackets and we'd just follow each other around. But we'd go up and we'd set up, there's this area where you could set up like, or you just find a hill and you'd set up a slide and you just walk up and keep sliding down. But getting to do it a bunch of times with the same people is quite nice. And this is like something nice to do in the winter. You're just like walking in and so quiet and soothing.
At one of the local mountains here, they actually have night skiing, but they also have snowshoeing at night. And the last time I went was when I was pregnant. So that was a long time ago. And everybody wears a headlamp and you just like snowshoe through the forest at night. It was so beautiful.
I'd love to do that. That's one of my dreams is to do that.
It was cool.
The other thing we got to try is along with the cross country. I can't remember if we also at the same place, but we also tried the biathlon rifles,
right?
For the blind biathlon, and for those who don't know what that is, that's for skiing and shooting at targets. And I guess in the Paralympic version, you they use a sound laser rifle thing, and you put this headset on, and that's actually a lot harder than we thought. We were only shooting, maybe 10 meters away. and you just had to, you'd get different tones for where the target was hitting. And first of all, I didn't even know what tone I was listening for, and I kind of got it later, but it was quite tricky. And I kind of want to try that with the skiing part too, because your heart rate's going and your head's pumping. I'm like, I wish we could try that sometime soon.
It was a lot harder than I expected too. Like just holding yourself still to like hit the target or line yourself up is kind of crazy.
And that's when we haven't skied 5 kilometers.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I hope that you guys are still getting out and participating in some winter sports, even though we're restricted.
Well, are you doing any winter sports now, Keisha, or have you been kind of trying? The only winter sport that I kind of joked with Sean earlier is, in Vancouver, does cycling count as a winter sport? Because everyone will still go right through winter biking if they can.
Yeah.
We could go fat biking here, but we can't do too much biking when it's super icy. But and for anybody who doesn't know, fat biking is just biking with big thick tires because it's better on ice and stuff like that. Snow sports haven't really started up here too much yet. Like we have a bit of snow, but Sun Peaks only just opened, I think last weekend actually. Or maybe it was this weekend, but I don't know. I did some hiking. Not really too crazy, just a little kind of more like a walk.
Well, and, you're getting out there is the important thing.
Yeah, getting out there. I do have like an auntie and an uncle who live kind of in the mountains, so like we can go up there and like borrow some snowshoes and go, you know, snowshoeing around. We can still stay social distance and whatnot. It's super good, but yeah, I look forward to doing a little bit and doing some things here and there, maybe a little ice fishing, maybe a little sledding.
Ice fishing. Is that a sport or is that a...
Depends who you ask.
I guess it depends. I guess it's more like just sitting there and...
drinking the hot coffee and waiting for the fish to bite.
And eating some snacks, yeah.
are you just saying coffee because this is a kid's show, eh?
Yes. Exactly.
A kid show.
Family friendly, we call it.
Yes, absolutely. eating some snow, you know.
All right, we're getting out of control. We should probably wrap things up.
Before we wrap up, I do want to tell this bobsleigh story. Because
Think it's bobsledding, yes.
Yeah, although the ironic part of this is I didn't do this in the winter. I did it in the summer. But, but it was still bobsleigh. So me and my friend, we took a trip, kind of like just a spur of the moment. We did Calgary in 3 days and then Edmonton 3 days. But while we were in Calgary, we went to the Olympic Park where they had the Olympics, yes, in Calgary. And they have it all set up there so that you can tour through the things and you can actually pay and go on a 4-man bobsleigh. And I guess for those who might not know what that is, it's just like, it's a kind of half enclosed track of, well, originally when I watched it, I thought it was on ice, but it's like, it's built like concrete and everything. And like it serpents down a side of a mountain and then you build it up. And so you can do different sports like bobsleigh, which is like a kind of go-kart kind of thing where you sit in and you can do two or four people. And you just like jump into it and you drive it down the course as fast as you can. And on the same course, you can do skeleton and luge, which are like sleds where skeleton is where you go head first and luge is lying on the back.
Is it called skeleton because you're most likely to die and become one? Like,
that sounds dangerous. I don't know why it's named that. I'm just like, that's what it's called. I guess like because you're like lying in a prone position. You're lying both in prone position. So I don't know. The guys that do that, those guys are got some. They really want. They're either really really into speed or they've got some crazy enjoyments. I don't know. But so when me and my friend went to try this thing, we got to sit and watch a video and got all these instructions and we got driven to the top. And because it's a 4-man, there's like other people there too. So they had a couple, it's like we jumped in with two other people and we all got in there just like you stuff up and punch your knees up and hold onto the bars. And we weren't going to be the ones driving there as a professional driving on the back. But so we were just there for the experience. And like, it really was kind of like an amusement park ride. You just like sit in the thing and you rock it. They push you and you rock it down the thing and you just feel all the turns and stuff.
Wow.
And you only get to do half the course because it's like it's for safety and all that stuff. But it was pretty fun. And yeah, it really was like just an amusement park ride.
Crazy.
That's amazing. That's so cool. One of my favorite movies is Cool Runnings.
Yeah. Well, thanks you guys for joining me today to talk about winter sports. I'm definitely feeling the urge to go strap on some skis and get out there. We just need a little more snow here.
Yes.
But yeah, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
It was fun.
You've been listening to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. I'm your host, Sean Marcellet. If you have a question or comment or a topic idea for a future podcast, send us an email to limitless@blindbeginnings.ca. And please join us again next time. In addition to our Limitless podcast, we also have a Limitless blog. And we have an exciting poetry competition going on right now. We're asking people to submit a holiday poem that they have written themselves. And the winner will be featured on our blog on December 24th and also will win a Blind Beginnings t-shirt. So get those poems in. You can send them to limitless@blindbeginnings.ca by December 13th.